The gun gives me an advantage. I just have to be smart about using it. When we pull to a stop at a nondescript warehouse, my whole body tenses, and the gun is slippery in my damp palms. There are no lights outside, so I can only see the faintest outline of the massive building. Nothing about it is reassuring. I have to get out of here. My first shot clips the soft tissue of his arm, causing him to emit an inhuman shriek. The second buries itself into his throat. I'll never forget the gurgling sound he makes as he chokes on his blood. I push it to the back of my mind because I don't have time to think about that. I climb over the center console and unlock the front door, avoiding his grabby hands as I shove at his body to dump him out the driver's side door. He's heavy and the angle is awkward, but I manage to topple him over. I'm about to pull the door closed again when three men in expensive-looking suits jog out of the building and toward the car. The car's still running, so I slam it in reverse, but before I can gun it, the passenger side door opens and a fourth man points a gun at my face.
Drop the weapon and get out of the car unless you want a bullet between those lovely eyes,
he orders. I release the gun, letting it fall to the seat, and he snatches it away. My hand goes to my stomach, not because I'm feeling queasy, though there's certainly some of that, but to protect the life growing there. The life Grayson and I made, and that I'd die to protect. 19. Two of the men in suits yank me from the car, completely disregarding the body on the ground. Blood soaks my shoes, and I know there won't be any amount of cleaning that will get the stain out. The two guys half carry, half drag me to the warehouse because there's no way in hell I want to go wherever they're taking me. My labored thoughts cycle around how to escape and what horrible things they have planned for me. Inside the warehouse, one lone naked bulb swings from a wire and two chairs are situated by a table. There's a long rope dangling from the ceiling and the men on either side of me bring me to it so they can bind my hands above my head. One splits off and pulls the rope taut, forcing me to stand on the tips of my toes to avoid dangling.
Who are you?
I ask them. The words are thick with fear.
Did Grayson send you?
One of the men looks up from his murmured conversation with the other guy in a suit. He's got the kind of face that induces nightmares, and I know that I'll never forget it. He's dressed in a suit like the others, and just by the close fit and expensive fabric, I can tell it's tailored, maybe even specially designed for him. His gray and white hair is immaculately styled, combed back away from the encroaching baldness. Thick gold rings with sparkling diamonds decorate his fingers. He would look average if it weren't for the dead blankness in his eyes. It's the sort of gaze that, when it lands on you, makes your insides quake with fear. And mine do, as soon as he turns his attention to me, and the second I say the magic word. Grayson. He holds up a hand to his associate and sidles over to me, looking like he should belong in a boardroom instead of a back alley place like this. My guess would be he's the one in charge.
So you do know Grayson,
he says after a moment.
Grayson Kingsley? King? Have you spoken to him since you helped him escape?
My gut tells me if I answer that question, I won't be doing myself any favors, so I keep quiet. He sucks his teeth and his cheek ticks.
Very well,
he murmurs.
Take care of her, Danny.
He directs this to a new arrival, who is out of breath as he shoves through the door. My own catches in my throat as I recognize eyebrows from the diner and my apartment.
Of course, Sal,
Danny says with an angry look in my direction. I want to tell him not to be pissed at me. I wasn't the one who told him to try to kidnap me, so it wasn't my fault he got maced. But that probably won't work in my favor. Sal leaves with two of the others, leaving Danny and one other man in the room with me. I try to breathe slowly and deeply to keep calm, even though everything inside me wants to panic. Little muscle tremors sneak out, but I otherwise manage to stay in control, show no fear. What worries me the most, though, more than Sal's dead eyes, and more than the potential pain I'm about to be dealt, is that I don't know why. Why me? Who exactly is Grayson, and what the fuck have I gotten myself into? I knew it was bad, but these guys, they're one level up from completely fucking terrifying. How did he know these men? How did they know I knew him before 5 minutes ago? What do they want with him? With me? As Danny and the other man, who he calls Andrew, circle me, I consider all the things I truly did not know about Grayson. And I curse him for everything he's done to get me into this situation. I swear that if I ever see him again, one of us won't make it out of the confrontation alive. I expect them to start in on the questioning, but they surprise me by sitting at the table for a smoke and a tug from a bottle of dark liquor. They're trying to kill me with anticipation, and it's working. It wouldn't be so bad if my shoulders weren't already burning with discomfort at the unnatural position. I glance up and find my hands are already discolored. I try to wiggle my fingers, but they barely move. My wrists are burning. My legs ache and quiver as they try to keep balanced. They don't touch, talk to, or even acknowledge me at all throughout the first night. I try crying, begging, pleading, screaming, but they may as well have put me on mute for all the good it does. I thought I'd been working past the abuse from Vic, but the moment they tied me up, the same fears and terror I experienced at his hands come flooding back. Each time I try to doze, my legs buckle, my arms scream in pain, and I jerk awake with a shriek, expecting blows to come from all sides. By morning, tears are falling down my cheeks unchecked because I'm exhausted, frustrated, and numb with pain. I can't feel my arms anymore, and I've long since given up trying to stay upright. Instead, I just dangle, circulation be damned. It doesn't even hurt anymore because I can't feel anything at all. Light is streaming through the windows that line the top of the walls when they acknowledge me for the first time. Danny's been glaring at me when he thinks I'm not looking, but I can't find it in me to give a damn about his bruised ego. Danny gets to his feet, his face impassive, if a little tired based on the smudges beneath his eyes. If I could move, if my muscles weren't frozen with exhaustion, I'd pull away from him. I expect him to hit me, to hurt me, to torture me. But these men are much, much too sadistic to make it that easy. Instead, Danny releases the rope from the pulley and allows me to rest flat on my feet and my arms to flop down, limp and useless. I'd think there was something wrong with them if they didn't hurt so damn much once feeling begins to return. He doesn't say a word, just watches as I shift from foot to foot, trying to improve circulation in my arms and legs. When I do, I want to cry out in pain. The pain is far worse than I thought it would be. Like thousands of bullet ants are stinking their pinchers into my flesh. I bite my cheek to contain the sound, and I do it so hard, I draw blood. The taste makes me so sick to my stomach that I puke up bile and blood at my feet. Danny shows emotion for the first time and takes a step back in barely masked disgust. It almost makes me want to smile. If I weren't gagging, I probably would have. I haven't had morning sickness since I found out I was pregnant, but what a time for it to show up. "Mama thinks you have a sense of humor," I tell the baby. I know it's crazy, but spending the past however many hours strung up, unable to sleep and surviving on adrenaline, has me twisted up in all kinds of ways. Talking to the baby, small though it is, gives me a certain sense of comfort. It was 2 weeks ago, just when I thought I was going to be okay with everything that had happened. I'd been so worried about getting an apartment and a job and keeping out of the police's sights that I didn't realize I'd skipped a period. At first, I thought it was stress. I'd skipped a couple while I was married to Vic, so that wasn't abnormal. But my body felt different. My boobs more sensitive, my emotions more volatile, my energy non-existent. And though it scared me right to my core, I just knew. I also knew the baby was Grayson's. Vic and I hadn't had sex since before Grayson arrived, so there wasn't a chance in hell that I was carrying his child. I was most grateful for that. If I were forced to choose between Vic and a convicted criminal, I would pick the criminal every time. I spared some of my cash to take a blood test at the healthcare center, and they confirmed my suspicions. I was, without a doubt, pregnant. They set me up with an appointment with an OB and a bottle of prenatal vitamins and then sent me on my merry way. At first, I didn't know what to do, what to think. Melinda started asking if I was allergic to the sun because I was acting so weird. It took me a while to realize it didn't have to be a bad thing. Maybe this was what was meant to happen. A baby, this baby, was the first good, positive thing to happen to me in a very long time, and I vowed I wouldn't let what happened to me happen to this child. I'll endure whatever they do to me to see that we both make it out of this hellhole alive. When the pain is gone and I can move my limbs freely, Danny strings me right back up. Only this time, he and Andrew pull the rope just a little bit tighter. My arms go numb much more quickly the second time around, and I'm only semi-conscious from lack of food and water, not to mention lack of sleep. Each sway of my body shoots me back to consciousness, and now there's nausea and hunger pains on top of everything else. This goes on for an endless amount of time. I can only tell it passes because of the light shining through the windows. I lose count of how many times they unhook me, allow the feeling back, and then string me right back up. Danny and the other guy are relieved from watch duty when another pair of men I don't know shows up. Hours and hours later, Danny and his friend come back, looking refreshed and well-fed. I can barely keep my eyes open, but manage to bare my teeth at them, which only causes them to laugh. If I weren't strung up like an animal for slaughter, I would have put bullets in every single one of them, Grayson included, for getting me into this shit. The next night, or at least I think it is, they bring out a jug of water. My mouth can't work up the saliva at the sight, but something primal inside of me aches at the sight of it. As if he knows what I'm thinking, Danny plops the water on the table in front of me and pours himself a glass. A sound only reminds me of the intense pressure building in my bladder. I look away and up at my discolored hands, hoping it'll take my mind off my body. But it doesn't. I fight the need to pee, knowing it's what they want. The degradation and humiliation. But in the end, nature wins out. The relief is overwhelming. But at the same time, relieving myself after so long shoots knife-like edges of pain throughout my middle. The pungent smell of urine wafts up around me, and warmth soaks my jeans, leaving them sticky against my legs. That's when they give me sips of tepid water from the jug. I'm so thirsty that I don't even care. They only allow little sips, but it's enough to wet my dry lips. I sway on the rope, trying to reach for the cup as they pull it away. And on the return swing, I spin around and meet a fist that connects right with my stomach. The cramps are immediate and brutal. 20. No, I say, but it's more of a croak. I don't know if I'm talking to the men around me or the ghost of Vic. As black comes into my vision, reality splits, and I feel like I'm back underneath this fist, struggling to stay alive. It doesn't matter. They don't listen. Another blow, this time to the face, no doubt to shut me up. Danny's fist connects just under my eye, and I snap around on the rope. My arms scream in protest, and my head feels like I have the worst hangover on the planet within seconds. Combined with the breathlessness left over from the blow to the stomach, I hurt so bad my brain doesn't know which part of me to focus on. Someone barks an order, but I can't hear it over the ringing in my ears. There's a flurry of activity, and then someone grabs my hips from behind. For one brief, terrifying second, I think they're going to rape me, and I struggle back to consciousness, fighting them as much as I can while I'm bound and helpless. Then the one in front of me, Danny, maybe, slaps me across the other cheek, and I realize the dick holding my hips is only doing so to steady me so I don't move so much. My left eye is already partially swollen shut, and my other is watering from the smack. But even with my blurry vision, I can see the horror movie quality table of nightmares they've arranged at some point. Knives, power tools, more rope, guns. I shudder and throw up the water I manage to choke down. Danny scowls and backhands me again. This time, I sway into the body of the man behind me, which only makes me gag again. The sensation of another man's hands on me is physically revolting. When I can see again, it's to find Danny with a small torch in his hand. Behind him, an extension cord trails toward the wall. The torch hisses to life, and heat flares across the sensitive skin, causing me to wince.
"Tell us what you know about Grayson Kingsley,"
Danny says, as he casually waves the torch in front of my face. I don't owe Grayson any loyalty, and I sure as hell would tell them whatever they want if it meant I'd get out of here alive, but there are two things wrong with this scenario. One, I have no idea where the hell he is. Two, I know the moment I give these men what they want, I'm dead. So I say nothing. At my lack of a response, the torch flares, and the hands on my hips tighten to the point of pain. I'm shaking all over, but there's no controlling that at this point. Danny squats at my side, taking my leg in his arm, and locks it tight. If I had the strength to fight him, I still wouldn't have been able to break his vice-like hold. The torch isn't huge, but the flame shooting out from the tip is very, very real, and I have no doubt effective. But in the moment, I don't even care, because the rippling and spasming in my womb, coupled with the fresh dampness between my legs, can only mean one thing. And if it's what I think it is, I don't care how much they torture me. I'll survive it, if only to rip their fucking throats out with my bare hands. Danny ignores the urine soaking my jeans, as he has one of the other men slice them up, so they're little more than rags hanging off my legs from the knees down. He rips them off and tosses them away before bringing the flame closer to my skin. I hear the sizzle of my flesh and smell cooking meat before I feel the pain of the burn. I throw my head back and scream up to the rafters. Before long, I lose my voice and can only grunt out strangled cries until he removes the flame. When I refocus on him, the flame is dark and his face is hard and blank. Death incarnate.
"Where is he?"
he asks. I don't answer him. Past caring, I zone out, my tired body resting against the one behind me. There's another sizzle, and then I convulse, wanting to move away from the pain, but unable to because of the hands holding me still. He pulls the torch away, and my body automatically sags forward. For the first time, I'm grateful for the bindings. I wouldn't be able to stay upright if it weren't for them. This time, Danny barely pauses and doesn't repeat the question. The flame moves up my leg, getting closer to the sensitive flesh of my thighs. His hands slip on my wet skin, but he either doesn't notice or doesn't care. And I forget to mention that it's blood and not urine because he touches the flame to flesh again. This time, I do pass out. When I come to, the sun is high in the sky, and I feel like I'm a column of burning ice. Freezing and on fire at the same time, I gag against the smell surrounding me. My cooked flesh, and manage to vomit away from myself instead of down my chest. There's nothing but bile to throw up anyway, and soon I'm back to dangling. My stomach cramps, and a fresh wave of blood coats my inner thighs. I moan, and tears course down my cheeks. I think I pass out again, because the next thing I know, a barrage of water fills my nose and mouth, startling me awake. They keep it in my face full blast until I'm breathing it. Then they turn it off, and I cough and hack up water at their feet. I hear one of them cursing, and then the water hits me in the chest as they hose me down like a dog. It burns like liquid fire when it hits the burned flesh of my legs. I want to pull away from it, to cry or to scream at them to stop.
but I can't. I'm completely powerless.
The fuck's she bleeding from?
One of them murmurs.
You didn't hit her that hard.
I can feel their eyes on me, but I can't open mine to see. Besides, I already know what they're staring at, what conclusions they're drawing. Let them see what they've done. If they have hearts enough to care, I hope it eats them alive until I can cut them out. The host comes back, this time to give me an impromptu shower. I want to tell them it's pointless because it'll just keep coming. They're still grumbling and trying to wash away the blood when orders are barked and the hands are back on my hips. Danny's shadowy form and the flickering light of the torch are all I can see. I use my last burst of energy to kick the torch out of his hand, and my foot glances off his shin as I follow through, and he grunts in pain. The metallic clatter of the torch hitting the concrete floor echoes throughout the warehouse. Danny waddles to it and snatches it from the ground. There's a flare of heat, and then the screaming pain returns, this time on the opposite leg.
Where is he?
He asks. Fuck you, I whisper. This time, he leaves the flame against my skin a lot longer. So long that I don't feel the pain anymore, which sounds good, but I know it can't be. Injuries without pain equal death. What does it matter? I'm dead anyway, right? He removes the flame, only to bring it back to a new spot, causing fresh pain. Eventually, I have to go to another place in my brain. One where there is no pain, where there is no death. Where the baby I hadn't planned for isn't leaving me before I ever got to properly love it as it deserved. The place I cultivated at the hands of a husband who didn't know the meaning of the word mercy. I'm ripped back to reality when they bring back the hose to clean me off again. The man behind me is gone, and I can't hold my head up anymore or stand on my legs, so I'm dangling forward, my eyes on the concrete beneath me. Bloody water travels in rivulets across the ground and to a nearby drain. Agony doesn't describe what I feel when I realize that's the little life I'd already thought of as mine. Sobs burst from me then, deep, racking, painful things. And I feel like a part of me has been ripped right from my heart, like I'm changed right down to my DNA. I know if I make it out of this, I'll never, ever be the same. The water cuts off and then they're back. I can't stop crying, not even when the flames come back. Then my tears turn into screams and I'm shouting and wailing with everything I have. It echoes throughout the warehouse, and the flame shuts off, and Danny hits me again, his fist colliding with my jaw, making my vision explode in a kaleidoscope of stars.
If you aren't going to answer the question, keep your fucking mouth shut.
He growls as he stuffs a strip of cloth into my mouth. I'm past caring. My legs too burned to be his canvas of torture, he lifts my foot, and the torch clicks back on. The moment the flame touches the sensitive skin of my soul, I scream against the gag and writhe against the man holding me.
Where the fuck is he?
Danny asks.
Tell me what you know and this all stops. The pain will stop if you just tell me where he is.
He drops the torch on the floor and removes the gag so I can speak, but instead of talking, I muster up enough saliva to spit in his face. His look of utter outrage causes me to laugh, though it's tinged with hysteria.
She's fucking losing it,
Andrew says.
Completely fucking nuts.
Which only causes me to laugh harder. There's a loud screeching sound from the warehouse door, and I wilt a little inside, knowing it must be Sal, whoever he is, coming back to get the results from the past few days, or to finish me off. Part of me almost wants them just to put a bullet in me, but the other part, the one who's sick and damn tired of being treated like shit, wants one chance, just one, to pay them back for everything they've done, everything they've taken.
Last chance,
Danny says.
Where is he?
Then a voice that isn't Sal's says,
Well, boys, if you wanted to see me that much, then all you had to do was call.
21. I wish I could turn or open my eyes enough to actually see him. That way, I would know he's actually here, and it's not some hallucination or shock setting in. For now, I'll choose to believe he's really here, and for that thought to light me up. I jerk in the bonds, and the man behind me tightens his hold. Danny straightens, his muscular body going tense as he turns to face a nonchalant Grayson.
King,
Danny says, though it's more like he spits the word out.
We've been looking for you. Torelli,
Grayson responds.
What have you got here?
I black out then, too overwhelmed by pain and disbelief to keep conscious. When I come to, I can actually see him when he throws a thumb over his shoulder in my direction.
This slut. She's just the dumb cunt I convinced to help me get out of Blackthorn.
He laughs, bending forward to slap his knee. Danny snarls at Grayson's blatant condescension.
Man, Sal must be hard up if he's sending men after the women folk to get his work done. Tell me, Torelli, are you that bad at your job that you can't track down a mark without resorting to beating up women? Tell me, King, are you such a pussy you had to run with your tail between your legs?
Grayson clucks his tongue.
I never ran. Unlike you, I know how to do a job properly. Now, are we going to stand here all day, or are you going to give Sal a call and tell him you're a complete fucking failure?
His gaze doesn't come to me once, not a single time since he got here. I know because I can't take my eyes off him, and for that, I hate myself. He looks nothing like the man I knew, and yet he's so familiar that it makes my whole body ache. Well, even more than it already does. Danny crosses the room to the table, and the others follow after, leaving me hanging, hurting, bleeding. I'm a piece of meat. It doesn't even surprise me when Grayson doesn't come to me. But that's okay. It keeps my brain busy and off the pain just to watch him as he studies them. He's wearing a suit, and he looks even more intimidating in clean lines and expensive fabric than the prison garb. The stark color against his tan skin makes him seem confident, sleek, and capable. Polished and refined and dominant. He keeps his hands at his sides, loose and ready, like a gunslinger or a gladiator ready to fight to the death. Danny is talking to someone on the phone, Salvatore, and I close my eyes against the pain radiating through me. When I manage to pull them open again, Grayson is close. His face doesn't betray any emotion, but he looks over me once, noting the bruises on my face, the burns on my legs, and the blood all around me. He doesn't say anything, and after his cursory once-over, I'm reminded of all the reasons why I want to be as far away from him as possible. So I turn my head away from him and wait to see what these bastards have next in store for me. But Grayson has other plans. While Danny's on the phone and the others are taking a smoke break, he cuts me down and takes my weight because my foot is burned so badly I can't stand on it.
The fuck are you doing?
Danny asks with one hand over the phone. Grayson doesn't spare him a glance.
You got the information you wanted. I'm here. You want to keep going at her?
His mouth twists and he looks up then.
Didn't know you were into that shit. Must be why Sal got into snuff films, huh? Kinky.
Danny frowns and then returns to his conversation. Grayson begins massaging my shoulders to increase blood flow to the area, but I shrug him away and take a step away. Well, I try to. My legs don't want to hold my weight, and the fresh pain that ignites in my limbs makes it so I nearly end up taking a nosedive straight into the concrete.
Don't.
He says. His voice harsh as he helps me back up.
You can't fucking walk, so don't fucking try.
I force my voice around the rawness in my throat. Don't touch me. He studies me and then retreats, his hands held up as he gestures for me to continue. I glare at him and limp to the table where I ignore the things on top of it and crouch down to sit on one of the chairs. I couldn't hide the pain lacing my features if I tried, so I don't. I let everyone in the room know just how vulnerable I am.
Boss wants us to take you to him.
Danny says as he hangs up the phone and comes to stand behind me. My shoulders tense at his proximity, but I made such a show of sitting down that I couldn't move if my legs had the strength to keep me upright.
That won't work for me,
Grayson replies.
Fred, you don't got a choice.
Danny and his men form a line between the exit and us. Grayson sighs, as if he's at the supermarket, and the clerk won't direct him to his favorite sparkling water.
Then I guess we have nothing to talk about,
he says, and pulls out a gun. He fires 4 times in rapid succession, faster than I have time to realize what he's doing. I fall unceremoniously off my chair, and the pain of the movement is so breathtaking that it causes my whole body to go numb. My arms come up to cover my head, and my eyes squeeze shut. When the shots stop, I look up and find the 4 men moaning and supine on the ground. I don't even think. I just get to my aching feet and stumble for the door. Footsteps are close behind me, but I move as fast as my battered body will let me. The last thing I want is to be caught, but it's no use. Grayson's healthy, rested, and still as quick as the snake. He reaches the door before me, barring its way. With 1 hand wrapped around my arm like a band of steel, he yanks me out after him and then scoops me up into his arms, as though I hardly weigh anything. But I don't want to go anywhere with him, so I'm scratching and clawing at every available part of him that I can reach until we get to a car and he throws me in the back seat. When I come up screaming and slapping at him, he deflects my arms and knocks me on the side of the head with a quick blow. 1 second I'm conscious, the next I'm consumed by darkness and shadows. I sense everything through a haze. The movement of a vehicle, the remnants of indescribable pain, the presence of other people around me. Panic threatens to swallow me whole, so I give in to the darkness once more. The numbness and haze continues for so long that I start to believe I'm dead. What else can explain the complete peace and sense of calm? Then something jars my body, bringing the crippling pain back to the forefront, and I wish I were dead all over again. It's only a minute's worth of eternal pain before a tiny pinch on my arm has my mind drifting. Then sleep comes. Blissful, uninterrupted, endless sleep. It's the murmured conversation that pulls me out of the drugged stupor with a snap. Immediately, I think of Danny and the band of thugs. I have to protect myself from what they plan to do to me next. I surge up, teeth bared and a snarl, and find hands pressing me into the bed. I fight them, and inhuman sounds come from my throat until I hear a voice I don't recognize.
Mrs. Emerson, you need to calm down. Give her a sedative.
Comes a familiar voice. Maybe I am dreaming.
She's already had too much,
the first voice replies. Neither of them sounds like the men who'd beaten and tortured me, and it piques my curiosity enough that I open my eyes, if only to prepare myself for my next version of hell. The sight that greets me is enough to choke off my screaming, and I shrink back into the blankets. A doctor, or at least I think he's a doctor based off the stethoscope wrapped around his neck, stands beside my bed, looking both concerned and intimidated. He straightens and sends a questioning look to another person standing in the corner. Grayson. He pushes himself off the chair he's been sitting on, comes to the foot of the hospital bed and rests his hands on the footboard.
Good morning, Tessa,
he says. I nearly laugh. Good morning? Good morning? Like he's a relative and I have the flu or something. I close my eyes and relax into the softness at my back, trying to remember what happened or where I may be. The memories of what they did to me are too much to process, so I tuck that back into the recesses of my mind and focus on the end. It's tinged with fogginess of recollection, lingering effects of the sedative, and marred by pain. First, my mind latches onto Grayson. He'd shown up at the end in a suit, called me a cunt, and then cut me down. I opened my eyes to confirm the image that comes to mind. He straightened and crossed his arms over his chest. I recognized the shirt as the one he wore when he was at the warehouse, but
but he shed his jacket and unbuttoned the top button and rolled up the sleeves. The doctor clears his throat next to me, and I look up at him.
Mrs. Emerson, I'm...
He looks at Grayson for confirmation, and Grayson nods.
I'm Dr. Haversham. I've been treating you for the past 2 days. You've suffered several second and third degree burns on your legs, multiple bruises, contusions, and a concussion.
He pauses, this time asking me for silent permission for something. He wants to tell me about the one thing I have been trying so very hard to not think about. I can hear my own body's response to the knowledge on the monitors beside me. My heart rate accelerates off the charts, and the doctor's pained expression flits from me to Grayson, and then back. Tell me, I say, my voice guttural.
You miscarried the baby.
He replies, sounding reluctant. From the corner of my eye, I see Grayson's hands fall to his sides, but the vision blurs with unshed tears.
I'm sorry,
the doctor says, but there's no point. I knew long before Grayson even showed up that my body no longer carried a life.
Baby?
Grayson asks. 22. I don't answer Grayson. Because what is there to say? He doesn't deserve the courtesy, and I'm too tired to say or do all the things I want to. So I close my eyes and pretend to be asleep until he leaves me alone. It takes me a few hours to figure out that I'm not in an actual hospital. No, I'm in a bedroom in someone's house. Grayson's house. The doctor and a woman I assume is a nurse check in on me for the next few hours. Most of the time, it's quiet, and when night falls, I let the tears come. They fall in streams down my cheeks. I shake so hard, I feel paralyzed, but I let the emotions come. I thought I'd cried all I could in the warehouse, but I was wrong. It seems to go on forever, until I spend all the energy I have left, leaving me to stare at the wall, feeling empty. More empty than I used to after Vic fucked me into submission and ignored me like I was less than a person. That tiny life was the only positive thing that came from the last 3 years of my life. And now it's gone.
Baby,
comes his voice from the darkness. I hear it, but I'm so tired, so thoroughly used up, that I can't summon the energy to move. I know he means it as a question and not the endearment.
You were pregnant?
He asks. So it would seem, I say dully. It doesn't matter. I'm not anymore.
It was mine.
It isn't a question. He says it like a claim. Like it's something vital and real. And it was. But it isn't anymore, and I don't want to talk to him. Especially about this. So I say, probably, even though I know for certain it was.
It was mine.
He repeats, his voice more insistent. I hear the chair creak, and my aching body tenses, bracing for whatever he has planned next. He doesn't touch me as I expect. He just moves the chair closer to my bed.
How?
I can't tell if he's merely curious or furious. He wants to know how I lost the baby, but that isn't something I can talk about right now. Maybe not ever. My hands knot in the thin bedclothes. I don't want to talk about it. I pause to clear the tremor in my voice. Does it matter? He sighs, and the sound caresses my skin. I can almost imagine that I feel his breath coasting along my flesh.
I guess not.
For some reason, his words cause my eyes to water again. I don't let them come this time, blinking furiously to stem the flow. The questions bubble up inside me, and I nearly choke on them. The reasons why Grayson did what he did don't matter anymore. They seem so very childish in comparison to all the things that have happened since then. One day, I'll demand answers, just not today. I roll away from him, unwilling to say anything else. Thankfully, he doesn't pry. I must fall asleep because the next time I open my eyes, I find the sun has risen and I'm alone. I watch the light for a long time before a knock sounds and a young woman enters. She's wearing scrubs, so I assume she's at least a nurse. I don't ask. I also don't ask how she knows Grayson or came to be in this room taking care of me. I don't want to know. "Hello," she says in a soft voice that is warm and soothing. I want to lean into it for comfort. I want someone to hold me more than anything. But instead, I swing my legs over the side of the bed. "Would you mind helping me to the restroom?" I ask brusquely. She nods, her hands efficient and capable, as she helps me navigate the wires and tubes and bears my weight as she guides me to a door off to the left. The bathroom is sumptuous, with granite countertops and expensive tile. I spot a walled-in shower with a dozen knobs and heads. After I do my business, I ask her to help me undress. "Do you want me to..." "No, I'm fine." I soften my harsh words with a small smile. "Thank you, though." There's a bench seat in the shower, and I ease myself down onto it with a small grimace. There isn't a part of me that doesn't hurt. Dr. Haversham had bandaged my thighs and calves with breathable gauze and some sort of waterproof plastic wrap. According to the nurse, they recently changed them, and I should be okay to shower, provided that it isn't too long. I don't even want to imagine what they look like. A cursory check of myself reveals blood, which streams down to mix with the shower water. I can't find it in me to be embarrassed. There's only room for the constant ache of grief. I don't know how long I sit in the shower, but it's long enough that the blood abates, at least for a while. Long enough that the thick glass walls are steamed from top to bottom and my skin is puffy and wrinkled. Long enough that the bandages on my legs need changing. No matter how long I sit in the spray, though, I feel like I won't ever get clean. It's Grayson who retrieves me when they've deemed my shower has gone on long enough. I don't fight him, although his touch makes my skin crawl. He simply appears on the other side of the glass and reaches in to turn the water off. Then he sticks his arm in and offers me a towel. I expect him to peek as I wrap myself in it and step out, but he doesn't.
"How are you feeling?"
he asks. I hate that his voice doesn't betray any emotion. The man I knew who was calculating, devious and flirtatious, is nowhere to be found. It only reinforces my belief that it all truly was an act. And like the idiot that I was, I fell for it. Guess it's a good thing I'm not an idiot anymore. I level him with a look, and he says,
"Fair enough. Is there anything I can get you to make you more comfortable?"
"You can tell me when I can get out of here. There's no point in dancing around it. I didn't spend 2 months on the run because I wanted him to find me. After what he did, the only thing I want is to get as far away from him as possible. Perhaps they're taking new bids on the International Space Station. Yes, that or another planet might be far enough away." His expression doesn't change, but for a moment, his mouth tightens.
"It isn't safe for you to leave right now,"
he says. I lower myself onto the bed cautiously and then allow him to cover me with the blankets. "What is that supposed to mean?" He glances away, and I have to swallow back the urge to force him to look at me.
"It means you're staying here until it's safe."
"And where is here?"
"My house."
I slump back against the pillows, more than a little stunned. Grayson has a house? I think back to the bathroom that must have cost a small fortune. It doesn't compute with the man I met at Blackthorn. The questions give me a bitch of a headache, which probably shows on my face, since he closes the shades and dims the lights without my asking him to.
"Get some rest. We can talk later."
"I don't want to go to dinner!" I shouted at the woman who'd come to invite me down. "I want to leave. Now!" My imperious tone does little to intimidate her, though she's 5 foot nothing if she's an inch. If anything, she absorbs my rudeness, and her fierce scowl intensifies.
Master Kingsley would like you to join him for dinner. 6 o'clock sharp.
The implication that tardiness is a mortal sin is implied. She leaves, and I throw myself back on the bed, muttering obscenities I don't have the balls to say to the tyrant's face. 3 weeks have passed, and I haven't left the room once. At first, I was too listless, too emotionally and physically drained to do more than the bare minimum. Sleep, eat, bathe, repeat. Once the good doctor gave me a clean bill of health a week after arriving, I thought it would either be time for the conversation Grayson and I were supposed to have, or time for me to leave if I wanted. Boy, was I wrong. As soon as the doctor left, I showered, dressed in the clothes provided for me, and went to leave. But the door was locked. It stayed that way until the woman, who I only knew as Marie, delivered my meals. She wouldn't answer any of my questions, and only speaks in orders. I get the feeling Grayson knows how I am doing. But he hasn't come back to visit, not that I actually want him to. He could go to hell first. He'd have to starve to death before he found me willingly joining him for dinner. 4 o'clock comes and goes, then 5, then 6. My apprehension grows with each ticking of the second. The television he must have had installed while I was sleeping only entertains me for so long. And then I'm right back to watching the clock. 10 minutes after, then 20. The clock strikes 5:30, and the lock on my door clicks. I expect to see Marie. I get Grayson. He leans against the door.
Now, the only reason why I think you'd refuse dinner is that you're still too sore to walk yourself downstairs. I wish you'd said something. I would have come up sooner, little mouse.
The reminder of the prison, of what had transpired between us, is almost too much. I launch myself to my feet. Don't call me that. I'm fine. The doctor says the burns have healed nicely. You don't need to keep me locked in here anymore. He studies me as if he doesn't quite understand me, but is desperate to figure me out. I don't like it. In fact, I want him to stop. If I go to dinner, will you let me leave?
If you come to dinner, I'll consider it,
he says. We both know he negotiates deals only to renege after he's gotten his way, but I don't have any other choice. I glance around the room, hating these 4 walls and knowing that his consideration is about all I'll get. Besides, at least this time, I'm going down on my terms, not his. Grayson waves an arm, inviting me outside into the hallway. Part of me is afraid of what I'm going to find. I take hesitant steps past him, and my jaw nearly drops. There are elaborate hallways in both directions, with dozens of doors on either side. This isn't a house. It's a goddamned mansion. What the hell was a man who could afford a house like this doing in prison? I shiver as I remember Sal and decide that maybe I don't want to know. Maybe I just want to get out of here and as far away as possible. When he puts a hand on my arm, I jerk back. Touching hasn't been easy for me since the night with Danny and Co. Grayson must realize that because he doesn't try it again. He just says,
"This way."
When we have to turn a corner or go through a doorway, I rub the spot on my arm where it came in contact with his hand and try not to remember where else his hands have touched me. He leads me to an intimate dining room with a view of gardens, which are bursting with color. It's a far cry from the cold grays of Michigan. It's funny how you don't know you miss something until you don't think you'll ever see it again. Not that I ever thought I'd miss the snow, but in this moment, I do. Silently, he offers me a seat at the table, and Marie brings out the platters of food with a smug smile in my direction.
"Anything else, Master Kingsley?"
she asks Grayson.
"Thank you, that will be all. See that we aren't disturbed."
I help myself to the steak and salad as he watches. After weeks of bland, hospital-like food, my mouth waters at the mere sight. I keep my mouth full so I don't have to talk to him, but it doesn't bother him in the slightest. He doesn't eat, just watches, still with the curious expression on his face.
Why didn't you tell them anything?
He asks when I finally cleared my plate. As I reach for seconds, I consider the man across from me. The dressings may have changed, but the air of brutality sure hasn't. He's violence wrapped in a pretty bow, danger made to shine. Only instead of the prison jumpsuit, his warning label is an Armani suit and a Rolex. Money is power, but on him, it's also lethal. They only would have killed me faster, I tell him as I take a bite.
Some people would prefer a quicker death,
he says. Some people are also cowards. He chuckles, surprising me.
I guess we both know you're far from a coward.
Are you going to tell me who they are? I think you owe me at least that. He leans back in his chair, his legs spread and his hands resting on his thighs. Posed that way, he owns every syllable of his nickname.
Telling you any more than you already know will only put you in more danger.
The rope. The blood. My murdered child would say otherwise. I'd rather know what I'm involved in than be in the dark. Besides, it's about time you tried honesty for a change. 23.
So,
Grayson begins.
The man who hired Torelli and the others?
I carefully place the fork on my plate, food forgotten, and gesture for him to continue. I keep my hands in my lap so we can't see them shake. Even hearing the man's name causes a tumult of emotions to rise in my chest.
You've met his son.
His fingers clench on his thighs, the first sign of emotion I've seen from him since I woke up in his house. I have? He nods and takes a sip of his glass of scotch.
Sal. Salvatore. From Blackthorn.
I can't say I'm shocked about that connection. Grayson continues, unheeding of my silence.
I guess you could say he didn't take it very well. He was never fond of his son, but the slight to his family. His name isn't something a man like Sal forgets.
He gets to his feet and goes to the window, leaving his food untouched.
I told you I wasn't a good man, Tessa. And I meant it.
You did tell me that. I reach for the glass of water and chug several gulps as he goes on.
The men who hired me to kill Sal's son planted me at Blackthorn. I did the job I was hired to do and planned to get out as soon as the opportunity presented itself.
Do you break out of jail often? My tone is sarcastic, but I'm genuinely curious. I know how hard it was to get him out. I can't imagine anyone who'd willingly get arrested on the chance that they could escape.
Not jail, but I've had to get out of sticky situations before. If you didn't help me, I would have figured out another way. The paramedics that drove me away, they were mine.
I don't even want to know how he orchestrated that one, so I move on. Why didn't Sal just have you killed himself? He smiles then. And the quirk of his lips is so achingly familiar, it causes me physical pain.
They tried, remember? I'm really hard to kill. Plus, they couldn't find me.
I don't have a response. I mean, what do you even say to something like that? So I hastily serve myself some of the sponge cake Marie placed on the table instead. Grayson keeps looking out the window. How did they even know I was in Los Angeles? At that, he turns and shoves his hands into his pockets.
If I had to take a guess?
He asks, glancing at me. When I nod, he says,
because I'd been spotted there. The fact that you were even still alive told them you meant something to me. They're good at what they do, almost as good as I am. So they knew if they found you, I would be close behind. You weren't hard to find.
I wince, the sponge cake turning to dust on my tongue. The news reports hadn't been kind in the weeks following Grayson's escape and Vic's death. They spun a story of a whirlwind romance that drove me to break Grayson out of prison and murder my husband so we could run away together. It wouldn't have been hard for Sal to draw conclusions from there, mistaken though they may be. But how did you track me down to California? It's not really near Michigan. He turns, hands tucked casually into his pockets.
If you thought you could hide from me, you were very much mistaken. I'm very, very good at what I do, Tessa.
What exactly do you do? I was afraid to know, but I'm done hiding from my fears.
I kill people for money, Tessa. Lots of money.
So, Salvatore, he was what, a job?
Yes.
I shove that away for another time as my brain starts to spin. But how did you find me? With a sigh, he gestures with one hand.
I knew when I got back to the house you were gone. There are only so many outlets from Michigan, and I assumed you'd stick to a well-known city you thought you could lose yourself in.
I swallow thickly, waiting. He glances down at my hand where my wedding ring should have been.
I knew you'd need money, so I checked all the pawn shops around your house first. When that didn't work, I started in Detroit. It took a couple of days, but eventually I found where you unloaded your rings. You got taken on that deal, by the way.
Son of a bitch. And they just gave you my information? Just like that? He lifts a brow.
Anyone can be bought. You just have to find the right price. From there, I checked the nearest transportation, which of course were buses. Of the 100 or so possible choices, only 3 fit: New York, Dallas, or Los Angeles. I figured you would have gone as far as you could. I was right.
The police. Why aren't they looking for you? Us? Did you buy them off too? At this point, I wouldn't be surprised.
I work and do business under an assumed name. Grayson Kingsley is my real name, one with a verifiable history for those who thought to check. But that name won't lead any of the authorities to this place. I own it and several others under the name I use to do business.
My head spins. What about me? Why did you do this to me? He pauses, his first during my little interrogation, and then says,
I needed help getting out.
I was just collateral damage, is what you're saying. I nod, furious with myself that a confirmation of what I had already known makes me want to cry again. I guess I already knew that. He doesn't apologize. Maybe he already knows it would be pointless.
You can stay here until I neutralize the situation with Sal. Whatever you need will be provided for you. Whatever you want.
He says. I want to leave. He sighs.
That's the one thing I can't let you do. They're still looking for me, and letting you go now would put you right back in danger. You're free to explore the property, though.
What does it matter if I'm in danger? He just looks at me, his electric green eyes heated with whatever words he's refusing to give me. When I'm certain he isn't going to answer, I say, Then I guess we're done here, aren't we? He starts to walk away, and I call out to his back. You're no better than Vic was, keeping me locked up. Thinking you know what's best for me, pushing me around, manipulating me. You told me I deserved better. I guess what you really meant is that I should exchange one prison for another. He walks out of the dining room instead of answering. Marie appears to lead me back to my room. The doors are kept locked at all times. You'd think with a house this size that someone would forget to close one of them, or at least leave a window cracked or something. But no. Grayson must have trained them well, because over the next week, I test them all for points of weakness to no avail. If I'm let outside to get some sun or fresh air, it's only to go to the back gardens, which are walled off and the only gate is padlocked. Scaling them is an impossibility unless I want to risk being sliced and diced by razor wire. It reminds me a bit of Blackthorn. By the end of the week, I think I've scoured all the grounds and searched through all the rooms that aren't locked. If there's a trace of who Grayson is behind all the masks he wears, I don't find one. I do find the libraries, as in more than one, a glass-paned conservatory and an indoor pool. It would almost seem like a vacation if I weren't being shadowed by one of Grayson's men night and day. On the handful of occasions that I'm not being watched by a person, I know there is a camera recording my every movement. Sometimes I flip them off just knowing he's watching. Each day starts with breakfast in the South Conservatory. The fare varies, but it's always served at 7. Coffee steaming, fresh fruit, and spicy sausages or crispy bacon with eggs. After I eat, I go to my room and change into a swimsuit that just showed up the day after I found the swimming pool. And I swim until my limbs are numb and my brain is comfortably fuzzy. If I weren't so incredibly wired all the time, I would have enjoyed exploring the library. But I can't seem to sit still anymore, so if I'm feeling up to it, I do a couple rounds in the gym or prowl the mansion back and forth until it's time for dinner. Sometimes Grayson joins me, but sometimes he doesn't. Our conversations never vary past what I've been up to that day, and they never last long, because I give clipped answers to all of his questions. He's lucky I haven't taken the silverware and stabbed him in the neck. Maybe that's why he eats at the farthest end of the table across from me. I don't want to question him about why he saved me that day. I'm afraid if I do, I may kill him instead of just imagining it. I don't know what it will mean if I kill someone in cold blood. That's a lie. It will mean I'm no better than him. I'm exploring the third floor rooms the following weekend when I come across another locked door. I look around, surprised to find my shadow gone and not a single camera pointed in my direction. I turn back to the door, curious. This one is different from the others. I can't say why. Maybe it's the lack of surveillance, as if Grayson doesn't want any record of who comes and goes from this room. Or maybe it's a gut instinct. Still, I know this place is special. I know it belongs to him as surely as I am aware I'm going to open it, regardless of the consequences. It's by pure luck that I managed to open it using pins from my hair and a hard shove with all my weight. His scent assaults me first, and I nearly stagger backward. It's the one thing I can't fight whenever I'm near him, and it only makes me hate him more. The fact that he still, after everything, can make me want him without doing a thing is infuriating. His room is huge, maybe double the size of the one I've been given. The bed is situated in front of me, and it has a sleek nightstand on each side. And atop each nightstand is a contemporarily styled lamp. A long chest of drawers sits to my left, with a tall mirror at the top. On the opposite side, there is a wall-mounted flat screen. I start with the drawers, since they're the most obvious place.